The United States Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims is now in session. The Honorable Coral W. Peach presiding. God bless the United States and this honorable court.
Good afternoon. This is Judge Peach, and I'm joined by Judge Allen and Judge Toth. We are convened today via telephone conference to consider arguments in the matter of Anthony Huerta versus Robert L. Wilkie, Secretary of Veterans Affairs, case number 19-2805. Will counsel, beginning with appellant's counsel, please make your appearance for our record?
Scott McKay for appellant Anthony Huerta.
Thank you.
Nick Esterman on behalf of the secretary. I'll be arguing today, and also with me is Christopher Wallace, deputy chief counsel.
Thank you. Does the appellant's counsel wish to reserve time for rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor. I'd like to reserve 10 minutes, if I may.
Okay. Thank you very much. Okay, counsel, if you're ready, we'll begin with appellant's counsel. Mr. McKay, you may begin when you're ready.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good afternoon, Your Honors, and may it please the court. The text and structure of Diagnostic Code 5000 or DC 5000 make clear that appellant's diagnosis of osteomyelitis of the pelvis independently entitles him to a disability rating of 100% without any additional requirement for evidence of an active infection or otherwise a long history of intractability and debility or other continuous constitutional symptoms. Through the regulation's use of the disjunctive word or, the secretary has conceded that DC 5000 provides five independent alternatives to establish a 100% rating, including osteomyelitis of the pelvis. The first four independent alternatives in the 100% criterion of DC 5000 all reflect specific manifestations of the disease without any textual reference to any active infection process requirement. Those are osteomyelitis of the pelvis, osteomyelitis of the vertebrae, osteomyelitis of extending into major joints, or osteomyelitis with multiple localization. For each of these four alternatives.
Mr. McKay, sorry to interrupt you. This is Judge Toth. So tell me what, I mean, I'm struggling to figure out what exactly the term chronic means here, you know, and specifically as it pertains to the distinction between maybe active and inactive.
Well, I think, Your Honor, chronic simply means a manifestation of the disease that has occurred on a regular occasion or more than several occasions.
So, I mean, would I be right in reading the regulation as saying that if we assume it's chronic, right, then this active-inactive distinction kind of becomes meaningless, right? Chronic sort of seems to cover, it would be deemed kind of presumably always active.
I don't think, Your Honor, you necessarily could equate a chronic with active. I think chronic, as used in the regulation, reflects generally the fact that the disease has manifested on multiple occasions and may be active or inactive at a particular time, but has certainly occurred on multiple occasions.
So, I mean, in that sense, it's somewhat meaningless to the regulation then, right? I mean, we would just focus then on whether it sort of fits the active-inactive dichotomy. Or as you say, I guess you're saying it's irrelevant to the 100% rating.
I think in that regard, you're right, Your Honor, in the sense that, look, under DC 5000, you have three categories of acute of osteomyelitis, acute, subacute, and chronic. And there's never been any dispute in certainly any of the ratings below or even at the board that the appellant, Mr. Huerta, was properly rated under DC 5000. So I don't think, yeah, I think that you have to just focus on the language of the 100% criterion and less on the language of whether it was acute, subacute, or chronic, because there's really no dispute he fell within that particular diagnostic code.
Okay, but because forgive me if I'm wrong, but I understood your brief as saying that, or basically the implications that you had kind of two paths to victory here. One would be just a plain reading that, that deeming it in an active status wasn't necessary, right? The other would be if it were deemed chronic, it would be presumably always active. Right, and the second one, whether it was chronic or not, was more of a factual dispute about the record. The board said it wasn't chronic. You claim it is.
That's right, Your Honor. Chronic, ongoing, recurring. I think each of those in that so-called second path to victory, which I think you've identified correctly, with the first path, I think, being the regulatory interpretation. If that answers your question, sir.
Yeah, thanks.
Okay. I think for each of the four alternatives in the 100% criterion that address a specific manifestation, the 100% rating is based on where in the body the osteomyelitis manifests. The final alternative includes a general diagnosis of osteomyelitis with a requirement for an active infection process, including a long history of intractability and debility, anemia, et cetera, and continuous constitutional symptoms. This final alternative authorizes a 100% rating based on how the disease manifests, that is, the degree it presents with an active infection process. By listing osteomyelitis of the pelvis, as well as the three other specific so-called wear manifestations as alternative evaluation criteria, the 100% rating for DC-5000 expressly differentiates between osteomyelitis requiring an active infection process, how it manifests, and specific manifestations of osteomyelitis, such as that in the pelvis, where it manifests, that required no such active infection process. Think, in effect, the regulation for osteomyelitis of the pelvis and the other specifically identified osteomyelitis conditions presumes compensable residuals warranting 100% rating without the need to establish an active infection process or even actual functional limitations. Consistent with the plain language of the diagnostic code, once appellant was diagnosed with osteomyelitis of the pelvis, he met one of the four independent alternatives based on where the disease manifested, which doesn't require an active infection process, and that entitled him under the plain language of the regulation to a 100% rating. Of course, the secretary disagrees, but the problem the secretary has is that there's no actual text in the diagnostic code that requires an active infection process to support a 100% evaluation for osteomyelitis.
Mr. McKay, this is Judge Hothigan. I mean, what about, in a sense, the converse of what you're arguing, which would be that the plain language by its own terms funnels all inactive cases through the 10% rating? I know it's not quite the argument the secretary made, but I mean, the plain language would seem to suggest that there's only one of the ratings speaks to this inactive-active distinction, and it clearly sort of funnels inactive claims to one particular rating.
I think that's very, very true in general for osteomyelitis. I don't think it has any bearing or any truth at all with respect to specifically identified manifestations of the disease in the 100% criterion, Your Honor. I think that's the difference. The funneling to which you refer is generally osteomyelitis, and I think your point is well taken. I think where the point is not, the point fails and it doesn't apply, is because the regulation says there are these four different specific manifestations of the disease that we're putting in the 100% criterion, I think those are outside that 10% funnel, and I think are differentiated and thus fall within the 100% criterion. I think basically the major problem, number one, with the Secretary's disagreement is that the Secretary is asking the court to rewrite the regulation by crafting and inserting active infection process language for osteomyelitis of the pelvis into the 100% evaluation criterion. And this is contrary to a basic principle of statutory construction, which we mention in our brief. But there are other flaws with respect to the Secretary's interpretation, which I've alluded to here. And the graduated structure argument is flawed because it's inconsistent with the well-settled principle that when a statute or regulation omits a term in one place that is used in other places, that omission should be regarded as intentional and should be given effect. Indeed, the diagnostic code uses the word active, as Judge Toth mentioned, in the 10% as well as the 20% evaluation criteria, and otherwise references active infection processes in the 30 and 60% criteria. That demonstrates that the Secretary knows how to craft a regulation that expressly requires an active infection process and would have done so in the 100% criterion for osteomyelitis of the pelvis if that is what was intended. Instead, the Secretary opted to include no such language for a 100% rating, and that omission should be regarded as intentional and given effect. I think the same flaw attaches to the Secretary's argument that the express requirement for an active infection process in one of the five osteomyelitis independent alternatives in the 100% criterion mandates a similar result. By listing osteomyelitis of the pelvis as well as three other specific so-called wear manifestations as alternative evaluation criteria from the general osteomyelitis manifestation requiring an active infection process, the 100% rating for DC 5000 expressly differentiates between osteomyelitis requiring an active infection process and specific manifestations of the disease, such as that in the pelvis, that don't require the active infection process. And that differentiation should be given effect. And we cite to the Tedesco case in the brief that we believe supports that notion. Finally, I think contrary to the Secretary's argument that his interpretation of the diagnostic code ensures a harmonious reading of the entire regulation, it actually violates the fundamental canon of statutory or regulatory construction because it fails to give effect to every clause and word in the regulation. By asserting that a 100% rating for osteomyelitis of the pelvis requires an active infection process, essentially the Secretary assigns no meaning or significance to the four specific conditions identified in that criterion of the pelvis, vertebrae, major joints, or multiple localizations. In effect, if you struck the phrase of the pelvis, vertebrae, or extending into major joints or with multiple localization, the Secretary's argument contends that that would not change the meaning of the regulation because all manifestations of osteomyelitis require an active infection process. By ignoring and rendering superfluous the regulation's express reference to the four specific wear manifestations of osteomyelitis, the appellant believes Secretary's interpretation is plainly wrong. The appellant respectfully requests that the court reverse the board's decision with the application of the proper interpretation of DC 5000 to the appellant's osteomyelitis of the pelvis, absent the erroneous requirement of an active infection process. The only permissible view of the evidence entitles him to an evaluation of 100% from February 1st, 1992 to the present, with the exception of the time he went back onto active duty. And absent any additional questions from the court, I have nothing further in my opening argument.
Counsel, this is Judge Peach. I do have a question. Once a person has been diagnosed with osteomyelitis, no matter where it is, do they always have it and it's a matter of recurring, or does it, or can it be cured?
Your Honor, I think as I derive from the record and looking at the diagnostic code and 38 CFR 4.43, osteomyelitis in certain locations can indeed be cured or can resolve. In other locations and in other circumstances, it never resolves and is continuous. But I think beyond that, I'd be speculating with my own medical opinion.
Yeah, and that's, yeah, fair enough. It's mainly a medical question. So if the appellant did not have osteomyelitis in any of those five categories that you point out are contained in the 100% disability rating, if he didn't have that, then, but had been diagnosed with osteomyelitis, then we would go to the active-inactive criteria, so to speak.
Yes, Your Honor. I think that's absolutely correct. There are four independent specific manifestations identified in the 100% criterion, one of which is osteomyelitis of the pelvis, which Mr. Huerta had. And those, because it's in the pelvis, the regulation determined that warrants a 100% rating regardless of active or inactive. Any other condition beyond those four, the regulation differentiates and says then you have to look at whether it's an active or inactive process in the gradations that the secretary points out in his brief.
Thank you. I have no further questions. Judge Allen, do you have any questions?
No, I don't, Judge Peach. Thank you.
Yes, Judge Toth, any further questions?
Not right now. Thanks.
Thank you, Judge Toth. Okay, thank you very much, Mr. McKay. And we'll hear from the counsel for the secretary, Mr. Esterman.
Good afternoon, Your Honors, and good morning, Judge Peach. May it please the court. Diagnostic code 5000 requires evidence of an active infection to warrant 100% rating. And the record as it stands is unclear whether appellant has had an active infection since 1992.
So, counsel, what does that mean? I mean, what's the distinction between active and inactive?
Well, Your Honor, I think the 100% criterion should not be viewed in isolation. The 10 and 20% criteria set the foundation and context for reading the higher available ratings and criteria. For example, a 10% rating contemplates past infections that have not been active within 5 years, so inactive infections of more than 5 years. And the 20% rating contemplates past infections that were active within the last 5 years or otherwise inactive. So I think the given this foundation, it's unreasonable to view that an inactive infection warrants 100% rating under any circumstances, which effectively jumps you from a 10 or 20% rating to 100% rating. And to read otherwise would kind of ignore the 10 and 20% criteria, or would effectively read in the word inactive to the 100% rating in doing so.
I mean, maybe I don't want to get too philosophical, but I mean, inactive and active is a sort of binary, right? It's a binary distinction. It's like an on-off switch, right? Whereas if you look at something like the 60% rating, I mean, it's judging kind of frequency of episodes, right? I mean, that's right. So it's more kind of episodic. And then look at the 10 and the 20%, and it seems to be judging the presence of something within a 5-year period, right? And I'm just struggling to kind of reconcile. The one doesn't necessarily map onto the other, right? Is it like a status distinction where something's either in an active or inactive state, or is it a matter of just sort of assessing the frequency of I guess, flare-ups or whatever you want to call them within a certain period that determines whether something's active or inactive? Do you understand my question?
Yes, Your Honor. I think ultimately whether something is active or inactive is likely a medical question that you know, per the remand that we proposed would still needs to be addressed. But the way that I read the diagnostic code and have it marked out in my regulation book is there is a line essentially that divides the 10 and 20% rating from the 30, 60, and 100% rating. And you're talking about active infections above that line and inactive infections below that. And I think without accounting for the 10 and 20% foundation in viewing the higher rating, you're effectively ignoring that active-inactive distinction that's clearly set out at the threshold requirements for a compensable rating under DSA 5000. So that's ultimately how you get that active component, you know, anywhere above 20% rating.
Well, I mean, I'm looking at the 10% rating, right? And I understand you could read this in a sense as sort of a staged rating, right, where you could say something is definitely inactive if there's been no evidence of an active infection within 5 years, right? I mean, that seems somewhat evident. The 20%, though, I'm not quite sure, right? I mean, I could have whatever evidence of an active infection from 3 weeks ago, right? I mean, I may still be in a whatever active status. That's certainly within the past 5 years, right? I mean, that's not inactive, and yet it would seem to fit the 20%. So I'm not sure how to read this.
I understand the concern with the 20% rating. I think effectively you would probably need some type of medical evidence to put a bookend on that. On the condition as having resolved or something, but you know that 20% criteria does provide an example, a draining sinus, as to something that you might expect in that rating within the last, you know, 5 years. And then the other diagnostic, the ratings above that provide other criteria that seem to build in severity. Ultimately, I think that active-inactive component and that distinction between those areas is set by those 10 and 20% kind of benchmarks. And I would also add that, you know, to kind of read out the 10 and 20% threshold would kind of create something that's contrary to kind of the fundamental principles of rating a disability, which include, you know, impairment in earning capacity, functional loss. So if you give, for example, somebody 100% rating with a resolved or inactive condition and no continuing symptoms, you know, that seems fundamentally contrary to how we rate disabilities. And that's effectively what's being asked for here without a ton of solid evidence as to the current status of the veteran's osteomyelitis, as well as any type of residual continuing symptoms that may entitle them to a higher rating.
Mr. Esterman, if you've finished answering Judge Toh's question, this is Judge Allen. Do you agree that the because it seems like you would from the brief that appellant's osteomyelitis fits within acute, subacute, or chronic?
Yes, Your Honor. I think given that he has ratings of 10 and 20%, there it fits within that finding.
Okay, so that's off the table. And then you also, I don't think, contest that he has it in the pelvis, right?
No, Your Honor. The evidence seems to show that he has infection of the hip or had a past infection of the hip.
So what would be wrong with saying that what our job as a judge should be is to simply read the regulation that says, for acute, subacute, or chronic osteomyelitis of the pelvis, 100%. Right, that if you took out every other word and you simply read the introductory clause and the 100% descriptor that says of the pelvis, that would describe his condition precisely, right?
Well, Your Honor, if I could clarify briefly, after reviewing our briefs, I think there is a component that to the 100% rating that maybe was not clear. The Secretary's view is that for a 60% or 100% rating, you need to have also evidence of constitutional symptoms. So the way we read the 100% rating is three alternatives that all require evidence of either debility, anemia, amyloid liver changes, or other continuous constitutional symptoms. And I'm happy to flesh through those alternatives for clarity. But if you could,
that would be fine because, you know, there is a lot of case law, not just from our court, but from courts that we need to follow, like the Federal Circuit and the Supreme Court, that say that the word or is disjunctive. And, I mean, there are many ors in the 100% level. And so wouldn't we be then, if you want to, if we, not you personally, the Secretary wants to attach onto acute, subacute, or chronic osteomyelitis of the pelvis and constitutional symptoms, right? If the Secretary had wanted to attach something to the pelvis, so to speak, wouldn't the correct word have been and as opposed to or?
Absolutely, Your Honor. I think the and is there, too. So if I could just walk you through how we view the alternatives. So the of the pelvis, vertebrae, or extending into major joints, and then that list is closed by a comma. So that is the first alternative we see. And that would be modified by the and debility, anemia, amyloid liver changes, or other continuous constitutional symptoms. And then the second alternative would be or with multiple localization, and then again, as a shorthand, and other continuous constitutional symptoms modified by that and. And then the third alternative would be or with long history of intractability and those examples of constitutional symptoms or other continuous constitutional symptoms. So
can I just make sure I understand you because I'm having a flashback to elementary school and diagramming sentences. So the only and that I see in the 100% level is between the word intractability and deemability. Is that right?
Yes, Your Honor.
So you're saying that that and connects to you're basically saying that it's of the pelvis and debility, anemia, blah, 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 blah?
Yes, Your Honor.
So then it would be not enough to have a long history of intractability, in your view. The and would then require that one of the other things be present, too?
Yes, Your Honor, and I think that makes sense in the construct of rating a disability generally, in that just because for intractability is difficulty treating or difficulty resolving, that alone without some type of functional loss or impairment in earning capacity would be insufficient for something like 100% rating, which is relatively severe. It would also require some type of constitutional symptoms that impact the entire body as a whole. And there's some examples provided in the 100% rating to kind of warrant the severe the significance of 100% rating.
And has the Secretary taken some position on this elsewhere? I ask because in your brief you have a sentence or two that asks us if we find this ambiguous to defer to the Secretary's interpretation of the regulation, but it doesn't tell me to what I'm supposed to defer.
Well, Your Honor,
a document, right? Because after Kaiser, of course, litigation briefs are almost certainly not going to be entitled to that type of deference.
Well, Your Honor, I recognize that I think if you do a search of the court's decisions, Diagnostic Code 5000 is only cited probably three or four times and none getting into the interpretation of the Diagnostic Code.
But that's our decision. I'm saying in your brief, right? So I just wanted to know when you asked us to take to defer to the Secretary's position, what were you referring to? Were you referring to the position you are taking in this litigation, or this appeal rather, or were you pointing us to something else that we would then defer to?
I understand, Your Honor. Just to clarify, though, we were only asking for deference in the event that the court found this genuinely ambiguous, and we don't believe that there is ambiguity in the structure and context of DC 5000. So to preserve the issue of potential deference, we did cite and make that comment in our brief, I think, following decisions like Ray, where we didn't preserve the issue. But, you know, genuinely, we don't think there's any ambiguity ultimately in the reading of the diagnostic code in light of the 10 and 20% that clearly show that there's a distinction between active and inactive that would require an active infection for purposes of 100% rating.
Yeah, I'm with you on what your position is. Your position is it's unambiguous and it is in the Secretary's favor. But then you did say, if it is ambiguous, you should defer to our position. I just want to know, when you say defer to the Secretary's position, are you saying the thing we should defer to is your litigation position here, or is it something else the Secretary has done that could arguably fit within the parameters of Justice Kagan's outline of the types of things to which deference would be owing when there is genuine ambiguity?
Your Honor, the best of my knowledge, this is the only interpretation that we've offered of DC 5000 to date, given the rarity that the diagnostic code is used.
Thank you. That was helpful.
As a segue, I want to ask you about 4.43, and, you know, I brought it up with Mr. McKay. What about the argument that that provision means that once a veteran, it says once clinically identified, right? So once you'd have once it were identified as chronic, that it should be regarded as a continuously disabling process, whether or not an actively discharging sinus or other obvious evidence of infection is manifest, right? So what about, I guess the argument is that once you have a diagnosis that something's chronic, it sort of removes this, it's presumed to be continuously active, right? That's how that provision should be read.
Yes, Your Honor. The way the Secretary reads 4.43, I think, is baked into Diagnostic Code 5000 to an extent that, you know, for a 10 or 20% rating, for a compensable rating, a 10% rating under the Diagnostic Code, you need to have evidence of reoccurrence. And so given that the veteran here does have a 10% rating and a 20% rating, there has been a finding that there has been some evidence of reoccurrence. And so to the extent that there's this concept of, you know, being continuously disabling, I think that is also baked into the 10 and 20% ratings, and that, you know, no matter how long your condition has been inactive after instances of reoccurrence, we continue to compensate you at 10 or 20% depending on how long ago that active infection was. So I think our reading of 4.43 is close to your understanding.
To that point, I mean, if it, you know, as a factual matter, if the board were to have found that, you know, that he were deemed to be chronically, you know, suffer from chronic osteomyelitis, would that sort of take this question off the table?
No, Your Honor, I don't think we equate finding of chronic osteomyelitis with something that's active necessarily, because, you know, as Appellant pointed out in his reply brief, there is commentary in the 1990s that the veteran's osteomyelitis was chronic. And I think if you look at just the plain meaning of chronic, that's persisting over a long period of time. And it looks like, from the record, the veteran did have some form of osteomyelitis for reoccurrence from about 1986 to 1992, and I think arguably 1994, though our opinions don't support that. So ultimately, you could, if you could look at it in the context of this evidentiary record, there is no evidence of any other type of recurrence since 1992 or 1994, all the way up through 2016. So I think potentially you could have a finding of that this is chronic clinically, but ultimately have no active infections or active reoccurrence of that for 20 plus years. such that you would fall within that 10% rating as an inactive infection. I don't think the finding of chronic entitles you to an active status in perpetuity. Does that answer your question, Your Honor?
Yeah, it clarifies your position. Thanks.
Thank you. If there are no further questions,
This is Judge Peach. I do not have any further questions. Judge Allen?
I don't either. Thank you.
Judge Toth?
Nor me. Thanks.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you very much, counsel. Yes?
I apologize. If I could just briefly conclude, we respectfully request that the court remand consistent with the bases outlined in our brief or any other factual evidentiary matters the court deems appropriate, and find that DC 5000 requires that active infection process for purposes of 100% rating. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. McKay?
Thank you, Your Honor. Briefly on rebuttal, I think contrary to the Secretary's argument, the appellant believes that this case doesn't present a conflict about whether his osteomyelitis of the pelvis is active, chronic, or recurring. The Secretary has conceded in his papers that the VA examinations in 2016 and 2017 were flawed or deficient in concluding that appellant's osteomyelitis of the pelvis was resolved or inactive. But a remand isn't necessary to develop further medical evidence in that regard because from the appellant's perspective, there is sufficient competent medical evidence already in the record that was considered and addressed by the board to establish that his osteomyelitis of the pelvis is an active or ongoing chronic or recurrent disease since 1986. And that evidence consists or is derived from the 2016 and 2017 medical opinions of the appellant's private board-certified orthopedic surgeon, Dr. Beauchamp. Obviously, we know that the board, in reaching its conclusion, afforded greater probative value to the VA medical opinions in 2016 and 2017 than Dr. Beauchamp's opinions. But now, given the Secretary's concession that the board's decision was clearly erroneous, I think that the 2016 VA examination relied on a faulty factual premise that there had been no active infection since 1989, when in fact there had been one in 1991. And the 2017 VA examination failed properly to consider appellant's medical history, particularly his MRI results in 2016. So absent reliance on these two VA examinations, the board's conclusion that the appellant's osteomyelitis of the pelvis was no longer active or had resolved by 1992 is unsupported and cannot stand in light of Dr. Beauchamp's medical opinions that are in the record. The appellant believes the only plausible conclusion which can be drawn from the evidence of Dr. Beauchamp's medical opinion is that the appellant's osteomyelitis of the pelvis has been active, ongoing, chronic, and recurrent since 1986. Now, the appellant is not asking the court to make an impermissible finding of fact or to reweigh the evidence. Obviously, that's not the purview or appropriate for this court to do that. But the board performed the necessary fact-finding and explicitly weighed the evidence of the VA and Dr. Beauchamp's examinations in a manner that was materially adverse to appellant. That turned out, in our view, and perhaps somewhat consistent with the Secretary's concessions, to be a clear mistake because the VA examinations were faulty, and without the VA examinations evidence, the board's opinion was unsupported and contradicted by the evidence provided by Dr. Beauchamp's opinions. In that circumstance, we think it's similar to the circumstance in the Trout v. Brown case we cite in our brief, our reply brief, that the board's decision must be reversed and remanded only for the prompt assignment of the appropriate rating, which would be 100% given Dr. Beauchamp's conclusion. And this, in effect, I think, is the second path to which I believe it was Judge Toth referred to in a question he directed to me in my opening argument. If the board has, if the court has no further questions,
Mr. McKay, this is Judge. Mr. McKay, this is Judge Allen. Before you sit down, which it sounded like you were about to do, or could you just respond directly to the Secretary's grammatical argument concerning the "and" that is included at the 100% level?
Yes, Your Honor, I'd be happy to. I think that the argument has no merit. It is the same argument that appeared in the statement of the case below, and it misconstrues the syntax, and it's inconsistent with the Gross case that we cite in our opinion, given the disjunctive nature of "or." Basically, I think you had it right, Your Honor, when you noted that if you strike all the extraneous language, it reads very clearly that if you have acute, subacute, or chronic osteomyelitis of the pelvis, that is an independent alternative for 100%. Then there are four other alternatives, and that "and" does not join the subsequent, under any analysis, that "and" does not join the following language: to of the pelvis, vertebrae, or extending into major joints, or with multiple localization, or with a long history of intractability and debility. Just the appellant's view is that it is simply not supported by the plain text of the language of the regulation.
Thank you.
Are there any further questions? Judge Toth?
Further questions. Thank you.
Counsel, are you any further comments from counsel?
Not by the appellant's counsel, Your Honor.
Fine. Thank you. Okay, then this case is submitted, and the court is in the case is submitted, and we will get back with you on the decision.
Court is in recess.